M3, number 4B.
Just as in mathematics, you want to demonstrate the truth and not your power over a false calculation. And the moment our whole love, our whole devotion, our whole all before the infinite being is turned towards demonstrating being itself, and see that all that can be demonstrated is that being demonstrates itself, our whole attitude towards life, our whole attitude towards being will change. You can't help it, feel it. And it changes because what we do is that in divine science, Mrs. Eddy says, we demonstrate the divine origin. See? That's something very different. We demonstrate the divine origin. All our intention, all our efforts, if I may call them efforts, all our intentions, our whole being, is devotion, you see, is directed into seeing, oh golly, I only want to see how the divine origin of life, of truth and love is being demonstrated. I want to demonstrate life, truth, love. That's what I want to demonstrate, and not something else. Therefore, I guess when we come to absolute Christian science, what we then demonstrate there is really newness of life or progression of life. Not progress, progression. See, progression is a much bigger term, is a much bigger concept than progress. Progression is that everything is accelerated out of its origin into higher and higher potentialities, so that we get here a sense that our whole life, our whole being, our whole mission, our whole raison d'être, do you know French? Our whole reason for being, you see. Our whole raison d'etre is really to demonstrate the progression of the true man. And not something, demonstrating something over the mortal. But that is really to progress, the progression of man, really to progress out of man to that which is after man. And that shows itself forth in the human. The moment we see that newness of life, something new breaking in, that has at once a relationship to its opposite, and that is in Christian science, and that shows itself as a victory over evil, over sickness, sin, death, you see. So here we get that which we usually call in Christian science demonstration, and you can see very easily what a little insignificant part this takes in the whole view. The whole vertical is demonstration. Not just down here. The victory over sin, sickness and death is demonstration. Think of all those healthy people that are healthy from, can you say, from nature, from birth. You have people who, farmers and so on, from the first day they are born until they are buried, they are never sick. They have just a healthy constitution. They don't need much victory over sickness. So they don't need Christian science. It's then Christian science only for those few poor people who are not healthy. See? And if it is so, that Christian science is only here and has only his raison d'etre to heal, then Christian science is the greatest malpractice you can think of, because you must have sick people or you can't heal them. Without sick people, you can't heal them. And if the reason for Christian science is to heal sick people, you must have sick people. You must make them sick or you're out of business. In other words, it is expecting that people get sick, or else Christian Science loses its reason to be. That's reductionalism. Can you see how dangerous reductionalism is? How we must take in dimensionalism. If you take in dimensionalism, then it is also for the healthy people, and even more for the healthy people. You see, then it's here to demonstrate the fact that there is actually being, being demonstrating itself, that there is actually a divine origin which to which we can always go back and demonstrate the source of our being, and that we can demonstrate really through that whole vertical that there is an infinite evolution, an infinite progression, I would say an infinite mutation of man taking place. And certainly in our century we are at the point where a tremendous mutation takes place in regard to man, where man will become very, very insignificant, irrelevant, obsolete, absolutely obsolete, because man is just a name, as Mrs. Eddy says. All there is the divine principle operating as idea. And God and man are just mythological concepts which we have taken over from the old religions. But there isn't such a thing in reality as a God or a man. There is only an infinite principle expressing itself as infinite ideas. And that's what comes out in the first three levels of science, divine science, Christian science, and only its impact on the old mortal is shown on the level of Christian science. But that's a very insignificant point. Let's take the question of evil in this column and see how Mrs. Eddy deals with that question of evil. This is naturally a tremendous question, and we could take it through all the various chapters of the textbook and see how she deals with it. Here we just want to see how she translates the question of evil through the levels. When she speaks about evil on the highest level of science itself, on the highest level of science itself, then she says, well, in the infinite being, evil is unknown. Well, that settles the question. And that's the easiest way to settle it. So it seems. But when one is not satisfied with that answer, that evil is just unknown and you feel evil all over your body, and certainly there is something in our mentality which is not up here on the level of science. And so it must have an answer that we feel evil, that we suffer under evil, though being does not know evil. And so we must take in the whole dimensions of the question of evil and first see that in divine science we have the right to exclude the whole phenomena of evil, to exclude it from the realm of being. So when she speaks in divine science, she speaks that divine science excludes matter, excludes evil. So she takes in a further step and says, you have the right to see that this does not belong to being. It's already a bit an admission that there is evil, you see. Then we come to absolute Christian science, and so she begins to say, but why do you still feel evil? And she says, though it doesn't exist, though it is unknown, though it doesn't exist, though it is excluded, why do you still feel it? And she comes and says, actually, evil is good, which you have not understood. Evil is not something, but it is just good, which has been misunderstood, misinterpreted, misseen, misfelt, whatever we can say. It isn't something per se. Evil is good. Just as you could take here matter and say matter is spirit, when spirit is not understood. That's all there is about matter. And you know, these are answers which Mrs. Eddy gives, but these are answers which you can read in every good book of any good thinking physicist or biologist or anyone. Lately, I've read quite a few books, and I came across all these statements in all the other books. For instance, I don't know if you know the physicist and philosopher and Nobel Prize winner Weizsäcker in Germany. He stated very clearly, he said, in the old terminology of the classical metaphysics, you could say that matter is spirit when spirit is not understood. Well, you see, I think that this man sees more than the whole bunch of Christian scientists who always say matter is opposite of spirit, matter is an error, matter is a danger, and makes dualism. These people have come to that level of absolute Christian science where they began to see there is no dualism. There is no good and evil. There is no necessity of a power of good over evil, to ascend above evil. They just see evil is nothing else but good, when that good is not understood. And that's what we have here. Then, naturally, the moment we see that, then it translates itself on the level of Christian science to the point where we have the victory of good over evil. So, if we would start right down here on Christian science level with our proposition of evil, we would work very hard to overcome evil with good. And that's how she presents the subject in the first three chapters of the textbook. And then she leaves it that way. It's only in the first three chapters of the textbook that she gives a sense that evil must have that good must have ascendancy over evil, that we must overcome good, that we must overcome evil with good. But then she leaves that subject and treats it with it quite differently, until finally, naturally, she shows that evil is just a misunderstanding of good, that actually evil is excluded from being. And finally, that she says, well, you ask being itself, and ask being itself what you know about evil. And being itself answers and says, what are you talking about? And I have never heard that word. It's unknown to me. You see, that's how we should reason. Then we take in all the dimensions. Or take the question of healing. Here again, we can see, well, healing is really on the highest level of consciousness, not healing, but is really wholeness. In the infinite one, there is no sickness, there is just wholeness, or holiness, whatever we want to call it. On the level of divine science, where we deal with the oneness, with the transparency of being, there we see that healing is always an instantaneous healing. Always. Even if a healing humanly takes weeks, it is always an instantaneous healing. From the point of view of God. It's only when we drop away from the science level and drop down to the mortal and go out from the mortal system of reference, then we have perhaps a healing that drags on and drags on and drags on. But from the divine standpoint, a right idea is always instantaneous. Always. Always. A right idea has no time concept, has no space concept. It's always instantaneous. It's only a matter which standpoint we take. If we want to evaluate the operation of being itself from a human system of reference, it never makes sense It never makes it. Did you understand what I said? That when we contemplate from a human system of reference how the divine being operates, it never makes sense. It's just as if the two-dimensional, the flatlander, can never understand the spacelander. So there the trouble comes in which we have. That's why we are dissatisfied sometimes with our demonstration. That's why we are unhappy with our lives. That's why we perhaps think things are not going the way they should go. It's only because we always evaluate the operation of the divine being from a completely opposite system of reference. And therefore, think of that cone that just rides through that surface. The cone, just sit on that cone. And right through the whole experience of mortality and right through and say, I'm the cone, I'm the greater dimension of life eternal which has no knowledge of any limitation, and I ride right through every situation and I remain what I am. Right through it. Your wholeness is your wholeness. That never changes. That wholeness never, never, never has any knowledge of anything opposite. It's always instantaneous wholeness. And that wholeness is always the preventive art of Christian Science. The moment we come to absolute Christian Science, it prevents that we get sick. It's the preventive art. And only when we have that preventive art and that preventive consciousness, we can ask, how does that, what is the impact which that consciousness has on its opposite consciousness, on the mortal consciousness? And there it has the impact that it is curative. So can you see this curative phenomena is the very same phenomena as the wholeness here, only seen from another level, from another dimension. Just as we had those cylinders and cones and spheres and had different phenomena of them, here we can see that the curative agent of Christian Science is the same as the wholeness of science itself. So but that's naturally the point, that if we want to have really a real experience on the level of Christian Science, then we must see that this is the outcome of a whole translation from the higher levels. And therefore that our starting point must be on the level of science. And then from there look out to divine science, and then to absolute Christian Science, and have its impact on the human and material level, instead of trying to climb up the ladder. Yes. Let's see the beauty, you know, and the greatness that lies in such a dimensional consciousness. See, you can ask me, well, did Mrs. Eddy see that? Did Mrs. Eddy teach that? Well, you know very well that she uses these terms. And you very well know that she uses these terms and say they are in a way synonymous, but we have seen that synonymous terms mean that they refer only to, in one way, sorry, that synonymous terms are in one way interchangeable, namely when they refer to God, but that they are not interchangeable and are very different when they show their different qualities. Now, take for instance a sentence from the textbook, as it says, from the infinite one, science, from the infinite one comes an infinite idea. And with this infinitude come spiritual rules and laws, and their demonstrations. Well, this sentence is, I think, one of the big sentences in the whole textbook. It's out of the chapter on science, theology, and medicine, which she wrote as the last chapter, and gives really the whole meaning of her discovery. That what she, you see, in that whole sentence, there is no mentioning of God, there is no mentioning of man, and so on. There it is in the chapter on science, theology, and medicine. In the chapter and that subchapter of science, she says, what is this science? She says, from the infinite one comes one principle, and it's infinite idea, divine science. And with this infinitude come spiritual rules and laws. You see, rules and laws give you the specific sense of this principle. Rules and laws specify in infinite ways how this principle works. Come infinite rules and laws, and their demonstrations. It's the demonstration of these infinite ideas. There is no mentioning there that we have to demonstrate something. There you have it very explicitly, that the divine principle demonstrates itself and shows the whole dimensional sense of how that infinite one comes right down to the point where it demonstrates the idea in human experience. Can you see how sometimes in one sentence Mrs. Eddy would combine all these levels, all these dimensions, just into one science? There's another thing I want to show you. I just have to fill up a little bit of time, you know. Something very interesting. Namely, let's ask ourselves, what would happen if we would become reductionalists? In any way, if we would become reductionalists, that we accept only the level of science, where we would say, there is nothing going on but the infinite one. And there are plenty of people who say that. You see? That there is nothing going on but the infinite one. So, they don't accept any of these lower levels. And if we only stay there and just say, nothing is going on but the divine principle, or nothing is going on but God. Have you heard that? Nothing is going on but God. Well, then nothing is going on but God. And that is a very bad thing, I tell you. That's reductionalism. Because then hell is let loose. That's really fatalism. So instead of being science, when we cut science away from the other levels and become reductionalism, then science is no more really science. Then it is fatalism. Where we say, everything is going on just as the God Almighty has foreseen it. And we can't do anything against it. It all happens as the God Almighty wants to have it. See? And it becomes fatalism. That's certainly not what we like. Or, if we take divine science and cut it off from all the other science, from all the other levels, and just have that sense where you feel there's just the oneness of being going on. There's just one being and going on, but in the oneness, and there is every evil is excluded there, matter is excluded there, there's just one, and you have heard them speak all over the world. There is only one. Only the one is going on. Well, we don't need Christian Science to tell that. All the mystics say that. That's true mysticism. Divine science is turned into mysticism when it is cut off from the other sciences. Because mysticism says the same thing. Mysticism says the same thing, that it says, I'm one with the infinite. And this is the mystical experience, that I'm one with the infinite. That I am one in the nirvana, with the big emptiness, where there is nothing going on but just this one being. So, if we just take that, and plenty of people just take that, call it divine science, actually it is mysticism. Take absolute Christian science and cut it off from all the others. And just have the absolute sense, where only absolute truths are being voiced. And where we just say, well, from the absolute point, nothing is evil, nothing needs to be healed. And it's true. From the absolute point of view, nothing needs to be healed. Let these people go, and you will see that they are sick one year after the other. That they get into trouble trouble after the other. Because they have cut off the other levels. And so their absolute Christian science is no more absolute Christian science, but it's just absolutism. It has no more a saving element in it. And so the absolutists, as we call them, are all over the place, especially here in America, and you know them. Nothing needs to be healed. There is no error going on. All is fine, you see, until you tumble over. And it's absolutism. But absolutism isn't absolute Christian science. It doesn't heal. It hasn't a redeeming element within itself. Well, take Christian science and cut it off from all the other levels. And all what we get is what we could call pragmatism. You call it pragmatism? Pragmatic? Yeah? Just pragmatism. That's what happens. Why do I go to Christian science? Because then I don't have to go to the doctor. Why do you have Christian science treatment? Because it's cheaper than the doctor and the hospital. Why do we want to have Christian science treatment? Because I only can go to the telephone and ring up. I don't have to go to the medical office. Well, it can become just pragmatism. Just can become something which you use so that our material and human welfare is improved. It's the improving effect that is tried to attain there. So can you see that we can't cut off one level from the others? Or it loses its essence to be science itself. All right. We stop here.